When we went through our rehearsal on Wednesday evening, I told the children that I hoped they brought a snack because my sermon was around 2 hours. For about 3 seconds, they believed me. On a Wednesday afternoon when I was in the second grade, my mom and I sat at the kitchen table doing homework. Now, I've shared with you before that school was a little bit of a struggle for me. Lots of different reasons. I think primarily because there wasn't enough social time and I'm an extreme extrovert. Like most elementary children, I had a weekly spelling test. So mom was quizzing me. Or she was trying to quiz me at least. I was doing everything in my power not to be quizzed, not to be cooperative. After several minutes of begging and pleading, threatening and arguing, mom stood up from the table. She called for my dad and she said, "You and Mandy take the casserole and the cake and go on to church. Carrie and I will see you when you get back." I looked up at mom, astonished. She was going to send my dad and my sister to church, and we were going to stay home and do spelling words? Dad and Mandy left, and I sat at the table, mouth open in shock. I immediately got to work on my spelling words. And my mom tells me that before my dad had time to get down the small mountain that we lived on in Georgia, I knew every word to perfection, had my shoes on, and was waiting in the car. I was not going to miss church. Even as a second grader, church was an important place for me. It was a place where I felt loved and accepted. I had friends who were both my age and who were a lot older than me. Church was a place like Cheers where everyone knew my name. It's true. And more importantly, I knew that I mattered there. This feeling from childhood has shaped both my calling into ministry and my basic ministry philosophy. I want to be a part of a church where everyone knows they matter, a place where everyone knows they are loved. In our two texts for today, we encounter words that communicate love, care, connection, and relationships. Psalm 23 is so familiar to most of us that the sad part is we have stopped looking at the words. And yet, here we have words of such deep love and care that they leap off the page at us. In this psalm, we see God's constant presence as we are resting and walking, fearful and anxious. God is leading us in order to renew us. When we are facing bullies and adversaries, God's hands are on us, blessing us for what we will face. This is not a fair-weathered friend. This is a caregiver who intends not to abandon us. This is an example of love. When we come to the epistle of 1 John, we are given a clear description of what love is and how it is to be lived out. Most scholars attribute John the Apostle, who wrote the Gospel of John, as the writer of this epistle. And with the way that the letter is written, it seems that this community and John, at the very least, are acquainted with each other, if not in deep relationship with each other. John tells this community of faith that he's writing to and to us today that all of us are called children of God. And that is what we are. We are not called adults of God. We are not called athletes, bankers, chefs, teachers of God. First and foremost, we are called children of God. And as children of God, we are to live, behave, and act in certain ways. Do you see the parallel between these two passages? In Psalm 23, we see how God interacts with us. And in 1 John 3, we see how we are to interact with one another. In Psalm 23, we see an active God who guides, leads, refreshes, and anoints. This active shepherd, this moving shepherd, demonstrates God's love and presence through us and in us during peaceful and hard times. In 1 John, we are given a very clear direction that our love should be demonstrated, acted out, not just said. In both of these passages, we see love through movement, love through action, love lived out. In 1 John 3, we're encountering a church that has had some disagreements, which I realize is very hard for us to understand. Throughout this epistle, John is trying to comfort those who seem to be at a loss over those who have left the church, to give hope to those who have stayed. But the ones who have stayed are just caught up in this fray over the ones who have left. In so many parts of this letter, John refers to God as light and love, calling for the listeners and the readers to live in that light and love. One way to do this is to care for their siblings who are around them, who are with them. These words were sent to this church in Ephesus around 95 to 110, literally over 2,000 years ago. And yet, do you see a command for us today? Are we as a church being distracted by things that pull us away from living in the light and love of God? Are we living as God's children? It's clear from the command in this letter that there are people who are in need in and around this community, and they're being ignored. John says that if anyone has the world's goods, they are to provide for those who do not. While the specific needs are not named, there are some safe assumptions that we can make. In every community, there are and always have been those who are hungry, homeless, jobless, alone, and abandoned. This community was so distracted by the things that did not matter that they could not be focused on the needs of their siblings. They simply were not caring for the children who were around them. And now for just a moment, let us shift to Mark 10. I chose the Message translation because I love the words that Eugene Peterson uses here. Shooed, irate, push away, get between, gathering. These words are so descriptive that we can almost hear the shooing, dare we say shushing. We have all experienced being pushed away, either physically or otherwise. But hopefully we have also all experienced being gathered up into loving arms, feeling protected and sheltered from all of life's challenges, even for just a moment. In all three of these passages, the path to love in action is clear. Think for a moment about what it means to be a child of God. Using the parental imagery, we know that our parents give us traits and characteristics. Eye color, hair color, the shape of our hands and our feet. Our parents also pass along other imprints to us. I know for a fact that I get my love of storytelling from my dad and my passion for baking from my mom. Being created in God's image means we have been imprinted with God's fingerprints, God's traits, God's characteristics. And then we are to impart those on everyone around us. God's great capacity for love, nurture, compassion, and welcome dwells within us. And these are the gifts we can offer to the world around us. Being created in God's image and following the example of Jesus, who lived in a manner that was an imitation of God, we are then called to live in the same way. We are to bless, we are to welcome and bless. We are to open our arms to all of God's children. This is a clear reflection of God's love and of God's very being. This is how we show the children of the world, who are our siblings, those children around us, the very small and the very tall, the very young and the very old, that they are loved by God. By being God's children, by following the lead of Jesus, who like us bears God's imprint. So the question we must ask ourselves is, how are we living this out? What does this love that we see in Psalm 23 and 1 John 3 look like in our lives? How might it look in our families, Are we showing our parents, siblings, partners, and spouses that they are loved? Are we putting down our phones so that we can listen more than we can talk? Are we responding more than reacting? Are we seeking ways to demonstrate to those in our family that they too are children of God, offering them the same hope, peace, and kindness that God offers us? How about in our work in our school? Are we speaking words of peace and compassion, or are we speaking words of gossip and sarcasm? As the Apostle Paul asks, are we building someone up, or are we tearing them down? Are we so focused and intent on getting ahead that we disregard those who get stepped on in the process? Is our ultimate goal success and financial gain? Or are we seeking ways to share all that we know and all that we have with others? How about us as a church? Are we showing welcome to everyone who is among us, whether we know them or not? Are we paying attention to helping new people know how they can navigate our campus, find out how they can become more involved? Are we being like the church in 1 John 3? Are we so distracted by things that don't matter? We're forgetting the needs of the person who's sitting right in front of us, the one who sits right beside us. Are we being mindful that everyone who comes in our doors has a struggle, has a need, and that our calling is to offer sacred, holy space that is free of judgment and full of acceptance? Are our children experiencing what I did as a child growing up in church? A place where they're known by their name? A place where they are loved and encouraged, not just by those of us who work with them, but by everyone? Are we living out the covenant we make with parents at family dedication, promising to walk beside them and to live as an example that invites all children, all parents, to be with us? Love and action means we pay attention. It means we are aware of the needs that are around us. We pick up extra boxes of cereal for cereal in the city. We gather supplies for the children at Lakewood Preschool. We go to Pinewood Elementary and read to scholars at Freedom School. We volunteer to be with children on our campus during Vacation Bible School. We get out and we walk for rain, showing our support for those who are living with HIV and AIDS. And the list goes on and on. Love in action means to move, speak, give. Your identity as a child of God, reflecting God's imprint, is revealed through your actions. This is what love is. It's not passive, it's active. And sometimes it's sacrificial. There was a father who took his daughter Helen, who was 8, and his son Brandon, who was 5, to do some shopping. When they arrived at the mall, there was a sign for a petting zoo. The children were very excited and asked with enthusiasm if they could go. "Sure," said the dad, and gave them each a dollar. The dad went on inside the store while the kids went to explore the petting zoo. A few minutes later, the dad returned to see Helen walking behind him. The dad was puzzled and asked why she was there and where is your brother. Helen looked at her dad and said, "The petting zoo costs $2, so I gave my dollar to Brandon so he could go." The dad was very surprised. And then without missing a beat, Helen said, "Our family motto is love in action." The dad was astonished. After all, they did say this all the time in their family, but how often does an 8-year-old repeat what you want them to repeat? Not only did Helen repeat the words, she lived them out. Helen made a choice to let Brandon experience something that she would not. She had the world's goods, and she led her brother to a place of care. So, this is love. Amen. Amen.